Well, tell me when you're ready, because I don't want to be out of you. You're kind of pissing me off in some ways.
I'm ready. Let's go.
Well, no, no. Seriously, we have to discuss why you pissed me off.
Well, because it took so long to go.
I mean, it seems to be a weekly occurrence where you're pissing me off. And it has to change because I find myself getting pissed off.
Frequently.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to another episode of Sounds from the 70s with Gary and Rob, sometimes referred to as the 21st century's Fatty Arbuckle.
21st century Fatty Arbuckle.
Now that's for all you Fatty Arbuckle fans out there who have no idea what I'm talking about. We're coming to you, as usual, from a soon-to-be-destroyed shack in the middle of God knows where, Alaska.
Yeah.
And today's episode, Rob, is brought to you by Spitfire Computer Programs. The computer founded in 1965, but only recently given a license. Spitfire, the computer program that a few people say was worth the wait. And we hope to have Spitfire as a...
sponsor? No, they're already a sponsor.
First of all, I like that because of the tone of what you said. But I also thought you said at the beginning bouncer, and I was going, yeah, we could use the better bouncer if people get out of hand.
Spitfire could be our bouncer.
Yes, they will be our sponsor until we piss them off, which we may have already done tonight. Who knows? But remember, Spitfire computer programs, the program just recently
rediscovered.
Rediscovered as being legal. Okay, so now on today's episode, we conclude our theme of American commercial folk singer-songwriters in the male category. As we review the debut album by Harry Chapin from 1972 called Heads and Tails, not to be confused with the 1994 porno movie called Head and Tails.
Okay, Head and Tails. Yeah.
A common misconception. Don't jump on. Don't jump on my punchline because you're almost ready to say it. He was almost ready to say it. Don't jump on my punchline. You're just here to say a few things here and there and then to go home.
But it's easy.
By the way, I hope the Chapin family appreciate a fine, well-thought-out joke, and don't sue me for that. There was actually no porno movie called, not that, to my knowledge, called Head and Tails.
Head and Tails.
Head and Tails. You got to think about it. If you think about it in a porno way, it's very funny.
I was already getting a mental picture.
What is this about? We have a very personal thing to say today about the company and everything, what we do. On a personal note, I actually found out today, that in this country, you cannot fire somebody because they are gay, which I didn't know.
Well, I think that would be an employer's preference.
So to our intern, Ricky, who is flamingly gay, I apologize. I really do. And we actually had to let you go, Ricky, because you moved the papers on my desk, which, as everybody understands, is a no-no.
No.
Don't move those. Oh, my God. Even Rob says, don't move the papers on his desk.
No, I've seen guys come and go for doing that.
Yeah,
mostly going.
And it was not at all because you are flamingly gay.
No, I mean, if that were the case, we would have gotten rid of Mike.
Mike had a contract that made it very difficult. Now, to show our appreciation to the gay community, Rob and I are actually strong supporters of the LGBTQCTOM, whatever.
TV.
And we spend many hours volunteering for that type of organization. to make sure that all queer people, whether they be a little queer or really queero,
super queer.
Oh, super
queer. Super queer.
Like, even if you're just, you're just like, oh, you know, I kind of got these feelings for the same sex. Or if it's like, hey, let's maramba.
Well, there is you only know, one sex,
you know,
yeah.
By the way, you know somebody's really queer when they want a maramba.
Maramba. You can rumba, you can, might be able to get away with that, but if you marumba.
Now, we spend a lot of time down at the place
where... Yeah. Things get done for
and
letters.
We make sure that whether they're little queer or really queero, that they're not made to sign papers that they shouldn't or whatever they do down there at the club or organization.
We
or
help out however we can.
I'm getting emotional now. But we do what we can. With the limited amount of time that we have of free time. See, I can't talk about this without choking up, but we love gay people so much. I mean, we're not gay. Oh, my God. Oh.
Is this us tooting our own horn?
I don't like to do that.
No, I don't either.
You know I don't like to do
especially
that.
Especially not in public buildings.
Only if I'm being threatened with a lawsuit. But, you know... I want to say that our love for gay people, and especially for lesbians, oh my God, lesbians. Our love for lesbians is beyond words.
Okay, now you got my attention.
Now we're talking about real stuff. Okay, nothing is not real. You know what? We care too much.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. We got to care less. We have to care less.
You know what? We got to spend less time down there helping people. Because we give too much of our time, and maybe we're hurting these sort of people.
Should we help the straights?
Yeah, okay. we love everybody.
We'll be taken through the straights.
Just to be serious, we love everybody, and we make fun of everybody. Everybody's on equal standing with us.
I'm indifferent to everyone.
But to Ricky, yeah, you shouldn't move my papers. Yeah. And it's not because, oh my God, you're doing the maramba. He liked to do the maramba.
You see what he's wearing when he's doing the maramba?
Oh, yeah.
You can't wear that.
Carmen Miranda type of thing. Speaking of people I'd like to fire, Rob, how was your week?
Well, it was a crazy, exciting week. I go back to work tomorrow for the first time in 3 months. It's been a long, enjoyable winter.
Is that tomorrow? Really?
Yeah, it's tomorrow.
Wow. First time in 3 months.
Yeah.
I had a story about that.
But you don't
know. And I'm trying to think of it. I'm trying to think of it. No, seriously, I had a story about that.
I don't think you did. I think you think you may have thought of you had a story.
It applies to what we're doing tonight. So... I'm going to save that, but remind me later on, okay?
Okay, I'll say, back to work.
No, don't say that.
Okay.
Okay, you keep on going because I haven't taken my drink of water yet because I was interested that you're going back tomorrow.
Okay, and then after I go back to work, I think I'm going to get a big case of beer and be the last case of beer I get for a while because once you go into work, that's it. You submerge and you don't come out for months on end. And then when you do come out, you're not the same person you used to be.
That's so funny. So, odds and ends, I love your funny stories. Odds and ends, lost time is not found again. Now, today on Odds and Ends, we have big news, I tell ya.
I'm waiting to hear it.
Big news, Rob.
Breathless anticipation.
We got two big news items, actually.
I'm going to start to breathe.
Why don't you tell the audience our big news instead of me all the time?
Our big news, we now got t-shirts and little fluffy things that have our logo on them. And after we got those in...
No, we don't.
No t-shirts.
Rob doesn't know any of our big news. I don't let Rob in on anything because if I did... he'd forget it anyways.
And at rehearsal, he just makes stuff up.
I just do. I just... Oh, yeah. So, we first of all, as a disclaimer, we don't have shirts. No and shirts. We probably never will because that takes a lot of our time and energy that we spend down at the LGBTQRSV. So, first off, the first big news is coming back today after a long, long rest period.
Ooh.
Is email.
We've not had email in a while.
I know, a long time. Like I just said, if you're listening, we have not one email, Rob, but four emails to do today. So everybody here in the shack is excited about that.
And we're going to go overtime again.
I hope not. I kind of doubt it. Email actually doesn't take as long as we think. Actually, what takes a long time is the segment. And we don't have a segment today.
No segment today, just email.
The segment is email. And I think we're going to come in under time today. That's actually could be the third news item. I didn't include that. But let's include that as the third news item. Is that I think we're going to come in under time today. And I also apologize, since this is odds and ends, I apologize that we were so incredibly over time last week, which was completely my fault, because anybody who listened to the Jim Croce show last week will heard me right at the beginning say that I had to add 6 minutes to the show because I had started the timer 6 minutes late, and yet through the whole show, I didn't. So instead of actually ending usually 20 minutes overtime we did, we ended up really long.
Yeah, it was 27 minutes?
Which was
an hour and 27 minutes?
That's ridiculous. No, seriously, that's ridiculous.
That's nuts.
And that's my fault.
We can't
because
do that.
I kept on thinking.
No,
that
it's not
my
your
thing.
Fault. It's Mike's fault.
Well, Mike is was supposed to
be here to keep time.
I'll tell Mike's an idiot.
Yeah.
Email. Okay. Now the next we even have bigger news, Rob. I think this is bigger news.
I'm gonna take your word for it.
Okay. Do you want to tell our audience about the bigger news?
Hey.
That's not it.
No, I don't. Why don't you tell?
Is this too big for you to tell our audience?
It makes me sneeze. I'm allergic to our next news item. I'm sorry. It's like a cat to me.
I like doing that to Rob. He has no idea what's going on. And so when I tell him, you tell him, he's like, wait.
Well, he's forcing me to make something up, which always makes you angry. So it's rewarding for me.
There's no winning for you. Coming soon, we will be making a change to our show. After we come back from our 1 week break next week, by the way, next week we will not be on.
We will not be on next week.
We will be on 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
We will have a new theme as usual, but after that is done, we will be concentrating more on particular albums every week than themes. I've decided, to kind of not totally abandon the themes altogether.
Take a break from it?
But, we're going to see how this works out. Because there are certain times when the show will be better served by having a theme. But mostly, I want to have just particular albums, selecting albums week by week with no theme. Because we are not getting to a lot of artists that I would like to. And, we may not get to them for another 3 years if we kind of stay. There's a couple of reasons for it. I to be honest with you, because we like to be very transparent with our audience about things that are changing. I just don't think that, I think it was perfect having the themes for the first 3 years of this show. And I just came to the conclusion actually just this last week that, I just think that we're missing a lot by not just saying, you know, we should have this artist on or this album on or whatever. But if we have to have that album on, then we have to have a whole theme, which means we have to have 3 weeks. So I think this would actually serve the show better. There are things like we're doing we always do an annual Beatles thing, a theme. There is stuff that we're not discarding.
We got
the
our Christmas album. That's got a kind of
that's not a theme.
It's a
one. It's just
theme.
A Christmas show.
It's a one show theme.
It is. but yeah, and there are things like we always do the 50-year thing at the beginning of the year for the four albums. We pick four albums from the beginning of each year. Like this year is the 50th anniversary of 1973, and then next year we will do the albums from 1974. Those type of things will keep on. If we find that a theme works really good, we will use that. But mostly, we're just going to have a lot of fun instead of being stuck with a theme, which didn't seem like being stuck until recently, to be honest with you. Here. It seems like we're kind of stuck for 3 weeks to a whole month with one type of music, and it's starting to grate on the nerves a little bit. I think I can even speak for Rob.
Yeah, funny thing. I was kind of starting to feel, I was like, this again, okay.
And we
my
can
enthusiasm waned after the last one.
We can do all the albums that we're doing like in the last 3 weeks, but to do them three in a row is, I have to admit, it didn't bother us the first couple of years. I think it's bothering us now because I could tell from what Rob was saying at the beginning of the year when we were kind of doing it, that it was starting to wear thin a little bit with both him and me at the same time. So, in other words, we're doing it for the better of the show, because I think also making you, a listener, be stuck with the theme of the same music for 4 weeks sometimes is can be difficult.
Themes, confining.
Themes are confining, and that's all we do. So we're going to mix it up a little bit. This is what we're going to do.
I mean, not totally abandoned. There may come themes that we want to do, but for now, heck with themes.
Well, no, because we're going to be doing one when we come back.
Really?
But I actually had. I'm not going to tell you what the next.
I don't theme know what is, to think anymore.
What the next theme is going to be, because I had this theme planned in like October of last year, and it kept on getting pushed back and pushed back. So I said, you know what? We're going to do this theme, and then we'll start with separate albums and see how that works. But I got to get this theme done, because actually it's one of the things that needs a theme. I'm not going to say what it is. But you will know when I say it that, oh yeah, this needs a theme. This needs 3 weeks to get through. And that's what we're going to do when we come back. And that's about it. That's our news. That's our odds and ends. That's our ends and odds.
On to the album. Let's go.
No, we're not going on to the album. We're going on to email. You don't know what the fuck we do on this show, do you?
I blame Mike.
You know, we always do a beginning, odds and ends, a segment, and then the show.
Mike,
you not get it after 170 episodes?
Mike would have headed me off at the pass if he weren't, if he were present, which he ain't.
Mike would have been reading a comic right now anyways and not doing anything.
What the hell's going on? Is the show over yet?
I gotta go home. I gotta go. I know you got 10 minutes left.
What do you guys need me here for?
Mike's an idiot. He's a good guy, but he's an idiot. If you know what I mean? Like
Mike, just look at the clock.
Separately away from the show, Mike's a good guy. But on the show, he's an idiot.
Yeah, he's not someone you want to work with.
No. You want to hang with him, but that's about it.
Yeah. He's good to hang with.
Email. Yeah. This is the segment, in case you, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, but let's just say this is the segment where you, our listeners, try and make me mad by asking questions you shouldn't. And that's always basically what they do. I thought it'd be a pleasant type of exercise, and it turns out to be quite aggravating.
Oh, you don't like talking to people.
I do, but I don't like their questions, and sometimes I don't like their names.
Okay. Names that can set you off.
Oh yeah,
names sucks. Like a John or Phil or Billy or something. Jeez,
Philly. Philly. I have never come across on this show somebody calling themselves Philly, but if I did, I would comment on it. That's for sure.
Well, it was actually Billy, but I think I was laughing at the time, so the lips didn't close.
I ate too much of those subs before the show. We had subs before the show, and I dabbled a little bit too much in the voodoo of the subs.
You'll be thanking for yourself for it in 2 days.
So I need to do for you to do a little bit of an Ed McMahon here for me. This is email number one.
Email number one.
Thank you. That was good. I want to do that again because I like that so much. So this is email number one.
Email number one.
I like that. Okay. This email is from Jerry in Pittsburgh, PA. That's Jerry with a J and not a G. As in Tom and Jerry, the cartoon with the cat and his live-in partner, the mouse.
You know, they were fighting all the time.
They were, but they also loved each other.
They wouldn't have stayed together so long if they
I
didn't.
No, it was a strange relationship. Anyways, this question though is from Jerry alone and not also his live-in friend. I bet you Jerry has a live-in.
I thought his last name
friend,
was
Friend, if you know what I mean. Friend. Yeah, which we support completely.
Yeah, friendship is a wonderful thing.
We're just saying, just Jerry has a friend.
I don't keep any friends myself.
Not in that way, no. But that's okay, Jerry. It's cool. I mean, if that's the way you want to live your life, we support it 100%.
Yeah, how could we not support it?
So Jerry asks, you guys have always said you would have guests on your show, and you never do. It's been over 4 years of no guests. Is there a reason for you guys lying? Well, let me say this. Just give me a second here, because I'm a little bit miffed. So, Jerry, first of all, I don't like you, Jerry. I don't like your name, and I don't like your attitude. You got one of those attitudes that just piss me off. You come into our domicile with your question, which should be a nice question. But then you attack. We're inviting you in. We're giving you like a pop.
That was like a ball kick.
Or I guess if you're in America, a soda. We're giving you a soda. A soda. Yeah, and then you. Or if you're in Britain, we're giving you a pint.
Do you come into someone's home and then be rude to them?
Or if you're in Holland, yeah, I could do that all night.
Potato chips and mayonnaise.
Mayo. Or if you're in Finland, we give you some ice. You know, so you come into our domicile and you're just rude like that. Now, I know that there are a lot of good people in Pittsburgh, but you are not one of them. I don't think. I think there should be like an X over your house saying, "I'm not a good man and my name is Jerry."
We're going to have some guests on soon.
The question I have for Jerry is where do you think our guests are going to sit in this crummy shack where we tape the show? You're going to sit on the floor? Is that what you want our guests to do, is to sit on the floor? Maybe. Is that what you want, Jerry?
In the tree stump that they chop wood on and other things.
Listen, think, Jerry, before you ask a question. So you can stop yourself before you're embarrassing yourself with your stupidity.
It embarrasses him.
Also a side note. More than a few people we have asked to be on this show, we found out, had passed away. Now, that can be a drawback in them showing up when we tape. So we have to be more hip with the times and ask, more... Because we want to get 70s people who, not 70s, but well, people involved in the 1970s, but a lot of them are passing away, and yeah. We could have got Rihanna on this show, but she said no.
She said
no. And we didn't ask.
Yeah.
So.
Without asking, she said no.
Email number two.
Oh, this is from Kent from Rhode Island.
I'll try again. Email number two.
Email number two.
Okay, this is from Jocelyn in San Diego, California. Very nice place. And Jocelyn actually sent a picture to us with her email, which is nice. And I must say, Jocelyn, you are a very handsome woman. You know what I mean, Rob?
Yes. Without seeing.
And you know, Rob, if you pronounce Jocelyn with a hard C, it becomes Jocaline.
Jocaline.
Just a fun fact.
I think that's if you replace it with a K. I don't know what that
is. No, but if you have a hard C, it becomes Jocaline. Jocaline.
Yeah. It's like it's from some European Slavic country. Jocaline.
Okay, we're losing viewers. We're losing listeners now, so we got two. Okay, because you're joking around too much. Just.
I am.
Just,
I can't just, be serious.
I know. Now, Jocelyn wants to know if we have a big audience that listens every week. Now, this question confuses me a little bit because does she mean a fat audience?
Yeah, an audience or big of in big numbers? People. An audience of big people.
And if it is, like, we don't. we don't look at our audience as fat or slim. We just look at them as our audience that we love.
Yeah.
So, Jocelyn, you and your racist comments don't sit well with me. I'm sorry.
Do we have a tall or short audience?
Oh, does it really matter, Jocelyn?
What's the eye color of our audience? Sorry, you got me going now.
I know. It's just the gall of her to ask if our audience is fat. Who cares? And if you're asking about big in numbers, I'll just say there are a lot more people than we ever thought would listen to this show than do. Because the second point of that is it's none of your fucking business who, you know, that's our business who's listening to our show.
Why would you ask something like that? Oh, Justin, how old are you? Yeah, like that.
So, yes, we have a lot of people listening to our show. And secondly, that's none of your business. I'm glad you asked the question. But when you ask a question, you have to anticipate an answer. All right? Why do people write in? Because they know I'm going to be like this. that's something that always strikes a key with me. Is like, what do they want the physical abuse or the verbal abuse? Because I can hand it out the best of them.
It's almost like being insulted by Don Rickles. What an honor that would be, huh?
We have a sizable audience. That's all I'm going to say.
A bunch of people listen. I don't even know the numbers.
Email number 3.
Email number 3.
Well, yeah, let's do it again. Email number 3.
Email number 3.
I like that. Okay. Oh, we have an email from my favorite place, which is Ireland.
Okay, cool.
My maternal grandmother and grandfather came from Ireland. Now, this email doesn't say where in Ireland. Person did not say that. But I'm going to say it's from Cork in the Republic of Ireland, just because it's my show and I can do what you want. I can do anything I want. So Danny, this is from Danny. Hey, wait a minute. That's got to be a fake name. Danny Boy from Cork, Ireland. Come on.
It's probably spelled different. B-O-U-Y.
What? B-O-B-Y?
B-O-U-Y. Boy.
Idiot.
I don't know why you keep having me back.
What an idiot. Holy fuck. I'm sorry, people. So Danny from Cork. His actual last name is not Boy, you idiot. I put in the Danny because I'm not even going to explain it because I'm so pissed off at the letters and now Rob and even a little bit of me. So
you're not playing favorites.
I'm not. I'm even mad at myself. So Danny from Cork. I'm sorry if you're not from Cork, but you should write it down. Danny from Cork wants to know each of our least favorite musical artists of all time. This is actually a good question. Ooh. I got nothing bad to say about this question. The only thing that I wonder about is what's Rob going to say?
I never thought about that. Bugs me the
if
most.
If you go on a desert island, the one artist you don't want on that island to listen to every day.
Trying to think of something that's driven me crazy, and it actually has to drive me crazy before I...
You drive me crazy. Well, let's go to me and then we'll
let's
come back
to you. There, and I'll try and think of something before the end of the show.
Okay. Now, I admit, before we did this show, not this particular episode, but before we did this show, I would have easily said, either the Grateful Dead or Uriah Heep. But since we've done this show, I've actually listened to all of the Grateful Dead catalog, and it's not that bad. You just got to get used to it.
Bad as it
was. I'm not saying it's great, and I'm not saying I love it in any sort of way. But I used to hate the Grateful Dead with a passion. And now I can actually play like a concert and only nod off a couple of times instead of the whole time.
And you don't get that rage you always used to
have. And I don't get that rage. That Grateful Dead rage.
The Grateful Dead rage. It would prevent you from falling asleep during one of Jerry Garcia's 20 minutes old.
And Uriah Heep. I changed my mind about Uriah Heep. Rob knows ever since we started the band in 1985 that I have been making fun of Uriah Heep ever since then. It's one of the worst groups ever. And we did their album, and I've actually listened to quite a few Uriah Heep albums since then, and I like them. Again, I'm not saying they're a great band, but they're a very good band. So, you know what? Those two that I would have listed right away go off my chart because this show has changed my opinion. I had an opinion, I should say, Rob, based on, first of all, a lot of talk, and second of all, on my limited knowledge of those two bands.
You'd only heard about the radio stuff.
Right, exactly. This is easy for me. I dislike Phil Collins. I don't like the person. I don't like the music. And I don't wish him any harm. But if something happened to him tomorrow by accident, I would not shed a tear. That sounds terrible. But I don't like Phil Collins. His music destroyed the 80s. I hate the reverb gate thing drums. Yeah. And he is my least favorite musical artist of all time. In any category, I like polka artists more than I like Phil Collins.
And polka artists.
Do I have to go on? Because I could. And he also stole Rob's bike.
Yeah, he stole my bike. Okay, that is unforgivable for me.
Now, Rob, that leaves you.
I'm still not drawing blanks here. There's a whole bunch that I'm indifferent to. But who really makes me mad? Trying to think of them.
Didn't say mad. This is least favorite. If it gets you mad, you probably don't like them too much.
Yeah. Least favorite. There's a whole bunch of their least favorites.
Ramones you don't like too much.
The Ramones I didn't like. I hate to say it. Just among stuff we've done, the Ramones and Weather Report were the two that...
they rubbed you the wrong way.
They did. I won't mention Country Joe and the Fish. No.
Don't even bring that name up. Even the name gives me shivers. It's a bad time in my life when we did that show.
See, with the Ramones, I still respect them. I like the radio stuff. But
okay, we're going to leave that. We're going to say for Rob, we might come back to that answer
in another show. You boggled my mind. Okay, Danny, you boggled my mind.
He's going to think about this for a week, and then, or we got a week off. So he's going to think about this for 2 weeks. And Danny, listen to our next episode, and you can tell all your friends in Cork what he said.
Yeah, if we don't forget, which you probably will. Because we know us pretty good.
Well, I don't forget. I usually put it in odds and ends. For this show, I don't forget. For almost everything else, I forget things like now. Oh, I forgot. Ooh. Email number 4.
Email number 4.
Ooh, I like that. This is from Chantel. Oh, I like that name.
Yeah, that's a nice name.
Chantel. In Nova Scotia, in Canada. Now, Chantel also didn't put in Nova Scotia where she was.
Probably Sydney Mines.
Oh, see, I just get so mad. So the price, I just really do. I get so mad at him that I really want a monkey. So the price you pay for that mistake, Chantel, of not naming where you're from, is for, of course, you know what happens. I make up a place in Nova Scotia that you are from. And let's say you are from New Glasgow, Nova Scotia. Because I like it. I think it's a beautiful city in Nova Scotia, New Glasgow. It's very small, but it seems... I like the name, New Glasgow. So this is from Chantel from New Glasgow, Nova Scotia. Your own fault. Like, if you're not going to put the down there, and I could be right. Maybe you are from New Glasgow. So
we don't know.
You don't know. You know, I need... I also have a second peeve against Chantel did not send a picture with her email. Is there a reason for that, Chantel?
Why would you do that?
Why would you do that? Write us back, Chantel, if you could, another email, and tell us why the snooty attitude, basically, that you feel that you couldn't even send a picture when Jocelyn could. What makes you better than Jocelyn?
If we emailed you, which we don't, we'd send a picture.
Well, we wouldn't, but we would send pictures of
Of someone we would say we're someone nice to look at. We would send a picture of someone nice to look at. That's what we'd do.
And we'd say, this is us. And we'd even sign it, even though that even wouldn't be our signature.
A little bit fraudulent.
Yeah, we're kind of like that. So Chantel says that it seems that everybody in your circle of friends has a nickname. But do you two? But do you two? I got a little bit dramatic there. But do you two? Actually, yes. But no. Yes and no. Yes, Rob has a nickname, which we will not.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say what Rob's nickname is, because then I'll have to explain it. It's a long explanation.
It's a long story.
Forget
it.
But not only do almost everybody we know have a nickname because I give them to.
Yeah, you're the nickname giver.
I am the nickname giver.
And that's a lost art.
It is. And I call everybody by their nickname. Yep. I do. I call everybody by their nickname that I gave them. And everybody kind of does that too. Now they kind of, not all the time, but they'll use that.
Who's our drummer?
Well, I'm getting to that. You got to give me space.
Who's our guitarist?
You got to give me space.
Okay, fine. I'll give you some space.
So I'm going to get to that. I'm going to get it because we got a lot of good nicknames. But the reason, now I don't have a nickname.
No nickname.
Now, think about it. If I'm giving the nicknames, why am I the only guy for 35 years who doesn't have a nickname? Actually, I kind of do. I'm not going to say what it is.
We call him No Nickname Gary.
But there's, this is a good story. Okay, I do have a nickname. A couple of friends call me something that I really like. But I'm not going to say it because I don't want anybody else to know.
Yeah.
And it has to do with my name, and I kind of really like it. Also, me and Rob have a nickname, but again, I gave that nickname to us,
yeah.
Which was Trapper and Trapper John and Hawkeye.
And Hawkeye.
Yeah, which is because that's what we are. Because
we had a Winchester.
We had Frank Winchester. Burns. But really, we are very much Trapper John and Hawkeye. And nobody calls us that because we came up with it, or I came up with it for us because that's what we were. So who else is going to know about it? But that's, other than that, I don't have a nickname because there's nobody to give me a nickname. So
yeah, nobody that sophisticated.
Now I'm going to tell you everybody that we both know together has a nickname.
Yeah.
It's just kind of what I do because I like to do it. And I don't really like to call people by their names. So we have Tony, who we were talking about earlier before the show, who is called Fat Tony he's fat.
Yeah, it's not ironic. No,
there's no tiny Tony because of irony there. No, it's plain Fat Tony.
And yeah, sometimes you're just given those nicknames to differentiate between several different Tonys.
Right. Yeah. One of the best nicknames was our late friend Tom. And I didn't actually give him this nickname, but I made it, what do you call it?
The palindrome?
Something that stuck with him his whole life. This goes all the way back to grade 7, because we, you know, went to school together. And in grade 7, one of our friends, we were in class, and one of our friends, who unfortunately just passed away too, he started saying names backwards. Of everybody that was in the class, just for fun, because the teacher was out of the room, and we had nothing to do. So he started saying everybody's name backwards, and the only name that that made any sense whatsoever as being said backwards was Tom's. And I can say his name because he's unfortunately gone. But it became Mott Le Curbe.
Mott Le Curbe.
It sounds French. And everybody said, that sounds brilliant. It actually sounds like a name. So for the next like 50 years, we called him Mott Le Curbe. We called him Mott or the Mottster. And the Mottster because it sounds like monster. And also a nickname, which I don't think he liked too much, but I called him it all the time. It was Tom Thumb, of course. We did that in the studio. I did that in the studio a lot.
So yeah, you got to remember the nicknames that the people don't like.
I just
write them on a little piece of paper for when you need them.
Exactly. And I say, how was that, Tom Thumb? How was that? And a lot of times our friends will have two or three nicknames that I will give them. And we will choose depending on how we feel about which one to use. My favorite nickname is our producer, Stu.
Oh, yeah.
At his recording studio. I gave him the name, nickname of Fucking Stu.
Fucking Stu.
Because
every time,
you tell us.
Every time his name gets mentioned, we got to put the fucking in front of it. And I don't remember how it got started.
Oh, it got started because when we were in the studio and we were recording, and then he didn't like something or something moved, he would stop the tape. And then we'd go, Fucking Stu. Just so we were getting going. And it would happen every session three or four times. You know, somebody would be playing the guitar solo and all of a sudden he'd stop it and it'd be, oh, Fucking Stu. And I was just really cooking on that solo. So it got to be that every time we called Stu's name, it would be Fucking Stu. So it stuck. So the strangest thing is you get on the phone and you say, hey, did you book time tonight with Fucking Stu?
See, it's one because you hear us using it, you think we're bad-mouthing them. But that's not the case.
That's not the case.
No. It just sounds like it.
Don't want to stay too long with this because people will get bored because they don't know ours. But one of our favorite ones, of course, our ex-drummer was named Lou. We called him Lou Schmoo, among Lou other Schmoo. Nicknames. We had about five nicknames for Lou, but our favorite one was Lou Schmoo because he didn't like it.
Made him furious.
So we called him that all the time. In our current band, we have, of course, we have Uptown Mike. Everybody knows Uptown Mike.
Also known as Mike the Salmon. That's his mom.
Mike the Salmon also. And the reason he was, we can't tell you, this question has been asked on this show before about how he got his name Uptown Mike. I can't tell you that. I've been sworn to secrecy, but it's for pretty despicable and disgusting reasons.
Disgusting.
And finally, our drummer, who is Rob's nephew, is called Pork Pie Hat.
Pork Pie Hat. He was 50 picks, but now he's Pork Pie Hat.
He was 50 picks because he always said, if you ever need a pick, I got 50 of them.
So you understand how Two Sheds got his nickname. Well, 50 picks.
50 picks. So we either call him 50 picks or Pork Pie Hat.
Had we not done that Jeff Beck album, he would not be Pork Pie Hat. Goodbye, Pork
That's
Pie
our
Hat.
That is our most recent nickname, because it just goes back to that. And we have many more, but we don't have time to go through. Yes, everybody does. Oh, Johnny John John. Johnny, we have a friend John, called John. John that we call Johnny John John. And yeah, oh, we also have for John, we also have, oh no, it's John. Hey. Which is terrible, but we do have that one too. Yeah, like we'll go, I'll say to him, like, have you heard from, oh no, it's John in the last
while? Now, here's a question. If all the females we know are referred to as the hens, is that a nickname?
That's a nickname.
That's
and
a nickname.
It's also a true statement.
Okay. Why does everybody keep calling me a chicken?
Oh, we can't. Yeah, we can't say the nickname for the girl that we can't say that nickname because if she accidentally hears the show,
yeah, there's sometimes
we'd be
when,
dead.
There's when people got stuff on you, and
if you're not a good person, you don't get a good nickname. That's exactly our motto. And she didn't.
No good nickname. And sometimes, if you are a good person, you still don't get a good nickname.
No,
sorry.
It's going to be a long show, I'll tell you right now. I did not expect email to last so long. But then again, you're all probably saying, I expected it. Today, we are talking about the work of, and I'm going to tell you right now, right off the bat, we are talking about a person who's probably, without a doubt, the best person we will ever have on a profile on this show. There's no doubt about that. There's not many saints. There's not any saints in the music business. But this Harry Chapin comes about as close to a saint as you can get. And yeah, there's no way we're ever going to do a profile on somebody as good as Harry Chapin. He's just. We'll tell you about all that in a minute, but we're going to profile his 1972 album, debut album, Heads and Tails. Now, Harry comes from like a musical family. His father was a jazz drummer. He actually drummed in a couple of very big big band jazz groups. Man, I'm just trying to pull this up here, Rob.
It's the Shaq internet. It's not good. The Shaq and, internet is dying.
His brothers were all into music. His, in fact, oh, he played, his father played on the road with Woody Herman. A lot of people, you won't know Woody Herman, but he was a very famous big band jazz leader. And so they had that. And then all the brothers became musicians. And his brothers, Tom and Steve. And and even his brother, Jim Chapin, the oldest brother. No, I'm sorry, Jim Chapin was his, I forget what the older brother's name. So I'm not going to get it. I'm not going to tell you,
Rob. I'm not going to guess.
No. But Tom and Steve really became the musicians. And in fact, they formed a folk group in the late 50s and early 60s. And they recorded an album in 1966 called Chapin Music. That, as you know, didn't do well. It's funny, but all the artists we covered had albums before they became famous. James Taylor, I forgot to mention, James Taylor had James Taylor and the Flying Machine. He recorded that with them. That got released later on, and he had that band. Then we talked about Jim Croce last week, who released an album by himself and an album with his wife before he became famous. And Harry Chapin released an album with his brothers that didn't do too well, but they all seem to release an album and then kind of get away from the music business and then all come back to it as a solo artist. Very interesting. And anyways, after that, Harry kind of, he left the Chapin Brothers. Chapin Brothers kind of broke up. The brothers had to go back to school because they were eligible for the Vietnam War.
Oh, yeah.
So they had to go back to college so that they would not get drafted. And so Harry was kind of left on his own. And he kind of did this and that, you know, to make ends meet. And, oh, he became a documentary filmmaker. And interesting, because he got nominated for an Academy Award in 1967 for a film called Legendary Fights, which was a short documentary film that he directed. He didn't win it, but he was nominated for an Academy Award for that, actually 1968. And in 1971, he decided to begin focusing on music. And this is, there's a lot of good stories I could tell about Harry Chapin, because I know a lot about him. And one of the best stories is that he never really played as a solo artist live, like toured and they found him. What happened was, there was this off-Broadway show called, I'm stuck, Jacques Brel Alive and Well, something like that.
Was that a musical?
I wish I could remember it. Jacques Brel is Alive and Well. And anyways, there was this show, and it played at the Village Gate in New York City. And what happened is that this show would always end at 9 p.m. And Harry had this idea with his brothers. He said, you know what? Let's rent this place, because they're not using it after 9, and all these people want more entertainment, but the show's over at 9. And they said, let's rent this place from 9 until like 1 or whatever. And we'll try and bring in people and see what happens. We'll rent it for like 2 months, which they did. They rented it for 2 months right after the Jacques Brel is Alive and Well. They would have the Village Gate Bar. And so the Chapin, they started with it would be the Chapin brothers with Harry. But Harry says, you know, Harry was kind of getting away from that. And he had his own thing. So he said, I'm going to do a set before you guys, and then you guys do your set. And then Harry said, and then Harry tried like playing by himself, and it didn't really work. So he said, I need a band. So he got a band together, and very quickly, like within a week or two, he just called people that he knew, or he put in an ad, and he got a band. And then they rehearsed like 6 songs really quickly in like 2 weeks to get ready for this stand, this 2-month stand. And then they played their first night. They had 4 guys on stage. They had a guitar player, a bass player, not a drummer, but a guitar player, a bass player. Harry on acoustic guitar and a cello player. Why Harry always used the cello player is because he heard it on James Taylor's album, Sweet Baby James. You keep getting these connections between these other two folk singers, which happens too with Jim Croce and Harry. But he heard specifically Fire and Rain, and he loved the kind of stringed cello on it. And it also worked perfectly with his gruff vocals. He thought that if he had a cello playing on his songs, that it would make his vocals sound sweeter. And actually, it did. He was actually right. And so he always throughout his career had a cello on it. So they had those guys. First night, they had four guys there and three people in the audience. But Harry was so good, even with just doing the same six or seven songs that they had learned that Harry had written, which became his first album, the people came, started to come a little bit night after night. And then this is where what happens when you grow up in the New York area, a lot different than if you grow up in Iowa or Canada or whatever. You just call up somebody and say, why don't you come see me? Much easier if you're in New York or Los Angeles.
Yeah, because those people who are coming to see are probably there too.
Well, they just go, you know. And I guess that Harry made a call and said, why don't you go? Oh, hey, I got a really good review in the New York Times, by the way. They went and saw them, and they got a really good view in New York Times. That kind of intrigued the record companies. And then Harry and his manager, you know, made these calls to like Columbia Records. Clive Davis went down to see him play, and Jack Holzman of Elektra Records went down to see him play. They both loved him. They had to decide between Harry had to decide between Elektra Records and Columbia Records. And his decision was made on two facts. One was that Clive Davis would always talk about business, the business of how it's going to be marketed and shit like that. And all that Jack Holzman wanted to talk about was how great his music was. So he said, I think we should go with Elektra Records. Plus, if they recorded in Los Angeles and in the Elektra Records studio, they got unlimited free time.
Yeah, see, that's the thing is, in the past, if I've been in a band and they get offered something to record, what usually happens is they loan you the money to record with, and after you record, you got to pay that money back.
By the way, I mean, we can have a topic on this whole thing, but it's a good point. When people say that, oh, we gave you $50,000, what do they call it now? Fuck.
An advance.
That's exactly what people have always assumed, that an advance means, well, we're going to advance you $50,000, you can do whatever you want with it. That $50,000 has to be paid back.
Yeah.
People, musicians have always gotten, until they became wise and figured out what it meant, always got tricked into thinking that advance means we expect a lot from you, so here's $50,000. It's not true. You have to pay it back.
The fact that he could record for free.
That's huge. That's huge. That would make me sign with him right away. Mm-hmm. So that's when him and his band recorded the Heads and Tails album. It took a long time to record. It was a very complex album. And right after the album was released, there's so many stories about Harry that I could go on all night. But then he was supposed to perform on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And he came on. I don't even think his album was released yet. I don't think so. Or it had just been released. Anyways, nobody really knew who he was. So he went on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and he played Taxi. And I could imagine seeing this guy for the first time and hearing Taxi if I was at home.
That song grabbed me. I heard that was the first song I heard of his that I remember identifying with him. And it was on the FM station. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But
so same with me.
Yeah, the first time grabbed me.
Like, and I had to hear it again. It's a song that has to grab you because it's so different. And the story is so magnificent. Like, it is told brilliantly from beginning to end, that if you're not captivated by it, then you don't like complicated music and all that.
Yeah.
You know, you want your songs to have la, la, la.
It's probably not of lyrics you're not going to dig on.
So he played that night, and Johnny Carson was so blown away, and they got so many calls coming in on their switchboard, which they had back then, that for the first time in the history of The Tonight Show, he was asked back for the next night. and to play. And he said, sure. Now, before we get into the album, we have to talk, of course, about Chapin, the person who... Harry Chapin played all the time. He was a professional musician from the time I was talking about, mid-70 or early 72, until he died in
81?
In 81, and I remember when he died, too. I remember that day. And it was all over the radio. Harry Chapin was... Everybody knew who Harry Chapin was. Nobody knew exactly how incredible he was with his benefits and his time until he died. Unfortunately, he was mostly known for his music, but he was known like Cats in the Cradle and Taxi, as those forever made everybody know who Harry Chapin was. And I just remember when he died, like it was in the afternoon on a Saturday, because he died about 12:30 p.m. Eastern time. So that would be, for us, it would be a couple of hours earlier. So the world found out by the afternoon. And it was big news, and it was very sad. And then we started to find out about all the charities he did. He played one time, I think it was in 1976, he played 225 concerts a year, that year. And 125 of them he did for free, for benefits. He alone, just as him, raised $4 million for charity. Just himself. And he was not a rich man. This is a guy who spent more money giving to charities than he gave himself. And to play more concerts for charity than you do for your own benefit is... You don't get people like that. I don't even know how we got him for that short time period. He once ran into Bruce Springsteen in 1978. They were both recording at the same time. And, Bruce was asking, oh, how do you play so many concerts a year? And Harry said, I always make sure. And I've never forgotten this. I heard this many years ago. I've never forgotten this. He said, I always play one concert for the audience, for myself. And then I always play one concert for free, for benefit. I said, that's who the fuck does that? 50-50. Who is that kind to be able to do that? And he dedicated so much of his life to trying to get these, I should say the World Hunger Association. He started in 1975 an organization called World Hunger Year, which I think is now called Why Hunger, I think. I want to check on that because I want to know if anybody wants to donate, to always donate. Hunger is such a terrible thing. And his whole being since he became famous was to eliminate hunger throughout the world, which is a ridiculous thing to have, as Harry would say, when you have all the resources to feed everybody in the world, but you don't. And he found that really silly. And so all his time went not only to that, but he had other charities. But that was what he started, was the World Hunger Year. And they asked him, well, why do you call it World Hunger Year if it's a charity? He says, because every year is World Hunger Year. He's a very cool man. He was not known for being cool. He was not liked by critics. His music was not appreciated by critics. No,
that's the other thing I remember is I heard that song early on and I liked it. And then I think a few years later, I was reading a guitar magazine or a music magazine, and they had a list of the top 10 most insipid songs. And that one was on it. And I was like, ooh, one of the songs like Taxi.
Oh,
one of the songs I like has been voted one of the most insipid. Oh, well.
You know what? I don't follow that shit.
No, it didn't bother me at all because I still like the song. Somebody did.
If you like
the
song, you like the song. I have never. One of his best friends of all time was Dave Marsh, and Dave Marsh is a renowned critic, rock critic, who says that I don't like his music at all, and he gave reasons to it. But I was good friends with Harry because Harry was an incredible human being. And he said, and I, in a way, agree with him. Some of the things that were said about Harry were true about his music. It was bombastic. There were elements. He wasn't a good singer. in some ways. He had a very husky voice, so he didn't have a great range. There was some production problems. What was the other thing? I always characterized Harry Chapin, because I really like Harry Chapin. Not only his music. I have a personal story. I'm glad I remember this. I have a personal story, but I want to see. I always liked Harry Chapin. But I always categorized Harry Chapin as, how do you describe his music? Well, it's like if he played Meatloaf's Bat Out of Hell on an acoustic guitar.
That's one of the comparisons I was making, in just the way the album was put together, and the production and sounds chosen, and the way the music was not dramatized. I made up a new word. Dramatize.
The music dramatizes the words. It was really bombastic. And you know what? Meatloaf's album was lambasted by critics too. Bat Out of Hell was just torn apart by most critics because they didn't like the bombast and the huge
production. It was production. Too in your face. It was with too the singing in your face
and yelling at you. And that's kind of what I like about Harry Chapin in a way. Sometimes he can get too much. I will talk about that a little bit later when we talk about the album. But Harry's music sometimes, I mean, the people loved his music. He sold 17 million records worldwide. That's an amazing amount of records for a guy who never got good reviews. It really is. It shows you how the fans loved him. If Harry came to your town, and I remember I was alive, you know, when even in the latter 70s when he wasn't really popular and all the hits had dried up, but he was still touring 200 concerts a year. He would sell out every concert. Sold out every concert. He was like seeing Bruce Springsteen. Because when you saw Harry Chapin, you always knew it would be a concert. Sometimes he played for 3 hours because he just loved to play so much. And he played for 3 hours. And you always went to a Harry Chapin concert if you were a fan, because it was just the thing to do. It didn't matter if he had a new album that was good or not or whatever. A Harry Chapin concert was something that was, it's like a Grateful Dead concert. There never is a seat. Yeah. You know what I mean? And the Grateful Dead never sold many records, and Harry didn't really either. But when you saw Harry live, holy shit, man.
He had dedicated fans.
And God bless him. Like, he was, I think he was underrated. You got to understand that in the 70s, critics were extremely cruel, extremely snooty, and to an unbelievable amount. Yeah. And Dave Marsh said, you know what? I worked for Rolling Stone, and I agree with some of the things they said about it. But when they got personal, I said, how can you get personal and criticize the man when you don't know him and know how great a person he is? And that's what critics used to do back then. You know, they'd say, oh, he doesn't know what he's doing, and he must be an egotist. And I said, oh, what the fuck? You don't know him. You don't know him. How can you say what he's like? Anyways, my personal story was that I, about 10 years ago, I got on this thing that me and Rob have been talking about, which is listening to everybody's albums. And the first artist that I ever said I was going to listen to their catalog from beginning to end was Harry Chapin. And I made that decision because I think I watched, something always happens that makes me want to do something. And I had seen a documentary on him on YouTube, and I was so intrigued that I said, I want to listen to his whole catalog. So I'm going to stream his whole stuff, you know, listen to a record a week. He was the first artist I did that for. And I've done that for Johnny Cash. I have listened to all of Johnny Cash's 100 plus albums. I'm not going to name all the artists I've done it for, but Harry was the first. And I'll tell you right now, I liked a lot of his albums. A couple of his albums, you got to understand, when you're playing 250 concerts a year, and you have 5 kids at home and a wife, and you're recording, how much time do you have to write? This is a question we've always raised about the 70s, haven't we?
Yeah, got to write on the road.
How do they have time to do this stuff? But Harry actually didn't have trouble writing. He never did. He never had trouble. He was a type A personality. He never had trouble doing anything. He just went ahead and did it. And but when you release so much, he released like 11 albums in just under 10 years, which is an album a year for a guy who plays 250 dates a year. I think your albums suffer a little bit. And this album suffered a little bit at the end of his life because of cutting yourself too thin. But still, I recommend his catalog to be listened to. And you can actually get almost all his albums in one box set for really cheap, like $70. And just look on Amazon, and they'll say all his Elektra albums for that he released. So that's every album except two at the end that he went on another label for. And I highly recommend it. That's my personal story. I have listened to every Harry Chapin album, so take that, you fuckers.
Yeah. Don't accuse me of not listening to them.
Now, I'll just very quickly, I know we're going to run out. I know we're just running out of time like you wouldn't believe. But Harry died very sadly. He was going to a meeting on that Saturday that he died in 1981. And then he was going to do again that night a free concert in New York City. And as he was driving into the city on the Long Island Expressway, for some unknown reason, he went right in front of a trailer truck type of thing. Went right in front of him. And if you want to know, they actually on YouTube will show their reenactment of the accident with computers. It's just very fascinating. If you actually want to see how it happened, they don't know exactly how it happened because, you know, there's conflicting reports about was Harry going too slow, but they feel that Harry drove, went in front of the guy, and then for some reason slowed down, and then the guy hit him in the back. And because he was driving a Volkswagen vehicle, they had their gas tank in the back. So it immediately ignited the gas tank. Now, people think there have been a couple of things that Harry was burned alive. That's not true. And that he died because of the fire or because of the... Actually, this is difficult because you don't exactly know. But from the information I have gleaned, he could have had a heart attack before the accident, but it's more than likely he had a heart attack after the accident because what happens, as the doctor says, you get hit from behind and it kind of rips your aorta from your heart. And that's what happened. I'm not saying that that's what happened, but that is what did happen. His aorta was separated from his heart. And so it wasn't actually, and he was pulled from the vehicle almost immediately. So he was intact. He wasn't burned alive. Yeah. The driver and a passerby pulled him out, right, the driver who hit him. And a passerby pulled him out right quickly before it really set on fire. Obviously, they couldn't do it. If it was on fire, they wouldn't go and get him. So he died. He didn't suffer any burns. He didn't die from that. He really died because he got hit, I think.
The impact.
The impact of the hit separated the aorta from the heart. And so just to clear that up, let's get to the album. We could talk about Harry Chapin forever about how good a guy he is, but we're not here for that. We're here to talk about the album. And, I need a drink. I've been talking so much. What did you think, Rob, about this?
I like the album. I liked almost all the songs. There was a couple there that didn't register with me. I didn't dislike them. They didn't register with me. But most of them I really liked for the lyrics. And the songwriting, the music, however, it... He had some really abrupt time and feel changes in the songs that were a little jarring. Were almost of a Jethro Tull type nature. There.
I agree. It's a good point. I never thought of that.
Yeah, I remember the Meatloaf comparison. That's one that I kind of drew to it. But also, I compared this a bit to the E Street Band, Bruce Springsteen's writing, in that he takes the music and really... Well, he takes the words and really makes the music to the words. He gets across the feel of the... There's all these little things in the music as he's singing that reflect the words being sung. And I can't think of any better way to say that right now. The music dramatizes the words. There, that's it.
Yeah.
It's really complex music, and that there's little really things is, here and there.
Why
that
it took so long to record is that it is very complex music.
I know sometimes he would go on a bit long. He got a bit long-winded either with the his melodies or his words, but because the music fit so well to him, it kind of worked.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of worked. So that's most of my review there.
You know what? This is actually a first, because this is the first time Rob's ever. You've ever
you needed a drink of water. Hey, I got to get you talking more.
And you know what? It's a very advantageous position
to be some of those salty crackers
to be the second to review it, because I get very enlightened by what you said, which I think is what happens when I because I've reviewed 170 albums first, and I think I really puts myself in, it's very funny, but it really puts myself in perspective for my review, where sometimes I'm a little all over the place until I get into a groove. But when I hear somebody like you talk first, then I get really focused. I say, oh, yeah, right. That's right. That's right.
I kind of, when you're reviewing first, I chirp in with my comments here and there and usually get all my stuff out of the way while you're doing a review. And then when you ask me what I think, I've already said everything.
Yeah. So. I know, because you were saying stuff that I was going to say, and I agree with it. Harry's music, for one thing, is that you either like it or you don't. I mean, you can tell that by listening to it. I like it. I know that, and this is one of his best albums. I have heard some albums that his songwriting wasn't up to par. You can't write every song great.
Sometimes when you're finishing an album, it's like David Bowie said, you don't actually finish the song, you just give up.
Right, you just give up. Except for our friend. Who we will not name, who never gives up.
Never gives up.
Yeah, you know, I really like the story song in general. If it's done well, it's one of my favorite forms of songwriting. I do like his voice in a way.
I do too. I thought his character singing. I also notice sometimes he'll be singing a verse as kind of the character of the song. Then when he gets to the chorus, he sings it kind of as a narrator and changes his voice slightly.
Yes, he changes.
And I thought that was really cool.
They are right. He sings sometimes a little too strongly. He does in Dogtown, I know. Dogtown is not one of my favorite songs of Harry's.
I do like the lyrics in that one. I do like the story.
I do like the story. I just think that... I don't know. I just... There's something that just rubs me the wrong way about...
The way he's singing.
The way he's singing. I think the approach to it, to be honest with you. There are times when I listen to this album or a Harry Chapin album, I say, that's not the way I would have approached that line or that word. The way he's singing it, not the way it's written, but the way he's singing it. And I caught him 3 or 4 times going, and I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying in my preference, that, oh, he went emotional with that when I thought he was going to go down. A good example of, I think, him hitting it exactly was, first of all, Taxi, which is a very complicated song to sing because there's pre-choruses, there's whole lot of technical jargon.
This is like really close to progressive music.
Yes. And Taxi, he sings to me, and it's very difficult because you have to sing everything right in a song like that. You have to be up at the right time, you have to be contemplative at certain times. He sang that song beautifully. Another song which I really have to point out is really sung perfectly, and it's understated, is the first song, which I just love, called Could You Put Your Light On Please. And he sings this song very understated, and it even comes back a little bit, and he almost sings by himself with his guitar. And it's very sweet. And it's something that you don't get much from Harry, is him being sweet, because he's very out there. He's a very A-personality type of guy, and he likes his music to be out there. But on a song sometimes like that, he will pull it in, and it's very Bruce Springsteen-like, Could You Put Your Light On Please, because it has dynamics that he uses in that song, which is what Bruce does, which is... an understated dynamics, which when it comes down low, he'll go, could you put your light on, please?
Yes.
Instead of, this is how Harry sings. Could you put your light on, please? But on that, he was really understated, and I was very moved. I thought, I wish Harry would have done that more in his career.
Yeah.
You know?
He knows how to Express the emotion.
I can
really
do a
well.
Good Harry impersonation, by the way.
I think so. He can. He. I just said the thing I said. His emotion fits really well with the songs. He's got the.
Sometimes, for me, sometimes, most of the time. Sometimes I think the emotion was too much or it wasn't enough. Okay. I think sometimes, just sometimes, he picks the wrong way to sing a line or a word. And even a word is very important. People say a word, you're
a word can make a sentence sound clunky.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you think the song is clunky just because of that. So it's very important. Now, I like, there's hardly anything about this album that I don't like. I did not like the kind of, I like the story of Dogtown, but I just didn't think he pulled it off for some reason. I don't know, I listened to it and I thought, oh, I didn't like the line in Greyhound. Where he says it's a dog of a ride. I thought that was a lazy line. And it really bugged me because it immediately struck me as a songwriter of, that's not a good line. Because of Greyhound, duh, duh. It's kind of a stupid line. I'm sorry, it is. Harry, I'm sorry. I love you. I think you're you're the nicest person we will ever
talk about. You got a good batting average, but come on, you got lazy.
Not everybody. I have bum lines too. So I'm not, if you looked at my stuff, you'd find a lot of bum lines. So I'm just picking this because it's right in the chorus and it happens every chorus and it's a dog of a ride. And I just didn't like that. It just really soured the song for me. And
it's the kind of invented language that doesn't
work. Yes. But I see he tells the story very well. I love Everybody's Lonely. It's a very, again, an understated Harry, which was very nice. I love that. Point I want to make, very Meatloaf-like on this song, Sometime Somewhere Wife, where he seems like the song is really good, seems like his ending, and it's a perfect ending. And then all of a sudden, it's a fake ending because the drums come back. And then he starts saying, I got to find her. I got to find her. I do a good duh. And I'm going, no, it ended perfectly. Why did you have to over-exuberate at the end and have it come back?
Yeah.
And I actually felt it ruined the whole song.
It's just, it comes back. And then within 45 seconds or so, it fades out on
And I thought that was totally unnecessary. That was a bad production choice and a bad arranging choice. You can kind of hear the glaringly the bad choices, unfortunately. They're not subtle, where a lot of times...
No, that's what I was saying. Really jarring timing and feel changes could happen here and there. But, in the course of his experimenting, he was a lot more hit than miss.
And he actually had a song less than 4 minutes on this, which is something for Harry. He had a beautiful song, but a very nice, simple song called Empty, which is 2 minutes and 57 seconds, which is very short for a Harry Chapin song. And it was very nice, a very nice way to close side one. Side two begins with Taxi, which I think is almost an impossible song to pull off for 7 minutes, and yet he does it. I don't remember the first time I heard it. But I do remember when I was a kid being enchanted by this song.
Yeah, you
because
had to
it
listen
seemed
them.
To just go off into other places that seemed effortless, but it's so complicated. And he sings everything just right, which is so almost impossible.
Yeah,
to do
that's
with this
one
song.
Of those songs where he just grabs you with every line and you can't
every line.
Can't stop listening.
And he ends it beautifully. First of all, the story is amazing. I got to tell the story about this song because I know this song. I know the backstory of this song. I always thought this song was true. I found out this week when I did a little bit more work on it. I know we're going to have another long show. I'm sorry, because I'm still a little bit away
from
finishing.
I'm just looking to make sure our line is still good. I don't really look at the time.
Okay. Harry was having trouble. He wasn't into music. He wasn't back into his music career yet. Harry was still filming. He was still a filmmaker. This is about end of 1970, just the beginning of 1971. But he was running out of jobs. For filming. He was always given jobs, but he was running out of them. And so he decided, I got to feed my family. I got like four kids right now. Or he had three kids he married his wife, Sandy. She had three kids. So, and they were about to have another one. So he was about to have four kids. And he said, I got to get a job. You know, I just got to do something. So we got a hack license for New York. And he had a week before we started. And then he ran into this old girlfriend very quickly and said hello. And then he sat home and said, what if I'm driving my taxi and I run into her and she becomes my fare? And then he wrote this song, not exactly like it was. He refined it over time because you could imagine it's a complicated song. But he kind of wrote it. And then the day before he was to go in to the taxi company, like the show Taxi, exactly like that. He was supposed to go in and start driving taxi. He got a bunch of calls for offers to do film work. So he never did drive a taxi. Never did drive a taxi.
But he got a great song out of it.
And the whole story is not true. It was his imagination of how, and they say how the girl, this girl was the love of his life, even more than his wife, Sandy. The first cut is the deepest. And I even thought that that made the song even more special when I heard the backstory about it. And I think it ends as nicely as I want. She still does her acting in the home, and I do my flying in my taxi when I get stoned. I just think that's a perfect ending. I just think it could have ended really sad, but you just can hear the smile on his face when he's singing, when I'm stoned. And it's just nice. It's like, I like my life the way it is. It may not, even though he says his name Harry, you know it's not Harry because... the guy's driving a taxi, right? And Harry doesn't. Yeah. So,
how you doing, Harry?
Yeah, exactly. So it's a little bit of Harry, but a little bit not. And it's just a brilliant song because to pull that off, there were so many things that could go wrong in a 7-minute song of that complication. And to pull it off to me like that is just incredible. I love the next song. I really want to get these in. Oh, God, the two shows in a row that are really long. Any Old Kind of Day. I love that song. Again, like Bruce Springsteen song. And it's very, it's just another Any Old Kind of Day. I just love the lyrics of that song. Again, one of these songs that you should buy, people should buy out there or stream just to hear like a song like that. You know what I mean?
I wrote songs about days like this, but not this good.
Yeah, this is really well done. If you think that Harry Chapin is what they say from critics, fuck that. Listen to that and find people who wrote songs like Any Old Kind of Day or Could You Put Your Light On, Please. Those are songs and Taxi that you buy this alone for. If I heard Could You Put Your Light On, Please on the radio, I'd buy that album just because of that. Same thing with Any Old Kind of Day and Taxi and Everybody's Lonely. And I thought the album took a downturn with Dogtown. I wish it didn't, but for me it did. And then I liked it with the same sad singer singing the same songs. Same sad
singer. I liked the lyrics. The music.
He faded a little bit on the music. The music
wasn't bad. It just didn't grab me.
No. It was,
but the lyrics, he sang, I definitely, the song. He sang I like the story.
The music kind of goes as his singing does. And it didn't work. But the lyrics are extremely well. One of the best lyrics on the album. I like this album a lot. I like Harry. Everybody likes Harry. But as a musician and a songwriter, I don't understand a lot of the comments made about him in the 70s. People were really snipey in the 70s. I find that funny at times, and I don't find it funny. I
felt he might have been safe to...
You know, once one person starts it, it kind of rolls down the hill.
Because he's not really in any... as much as he's a singer-songwriter, a bunch of this stuff, you'd think, where can I find a radio station to play this? Because this first song, I can play at an AM station, but then it gets in that middle part there, and that's got to be on an FM station, and...
And it's funny because we both heard Taxi on the FM station, but I know
it's not an FM song.
It got played on AM stations, the full version, which is amazing. It shows you how powerful the song is. Also, just before we end, because we got to get out of here.
What are we doing?
Cats in the Cradle is one of the best songs ever. Yeah. And anybody who is not moved by Cats in the Cradle
identifies himself as a monster.
It is, yes. And everybody kind of like knows Cats in the Cradle, and I've heard it mentioned so many times on movies and TV shows, and this is like a Cats in the Cradle type thing, and I always tear up at that song. Yep. It always gets to me.
Anyone who has a dad,
anyone who has a dad, if you don't get emotional that song, then you're made of stone.
You're a monster.
Yeah. I just wanted to mention that. And you know what? He has a lot of songs like that. You people should dive into his work. I know he's well loved, and I'm one of them. I just I wish he was around. We need him. You know, we always lose the good people young, you know. That's it. We gotta go. This is our second longest show ever.
I think it's gonna be a long New Year.
Oh, we didn't rate it. I give it 4 stars. What do you give
it? I gave it 4 stars. I started 3.5, but his songwriting and the way he puts the songs together really, really elevated it.
I agree. I think it's a good. I think it's. I think we both agree. It's a strong 4-star record, and anything. To me, anything less, and it has enough deficiencies not to give it anything more. It's a definite 4-star.
But so many of the songs stuck with me.
Oh yeah, still do. I can sing almost all of them. To be honest with you, right now, that's our show for today. Now remember, next week we won't have a new show.
No more show.
No, not because next week. Rob has to get a boil removed from his foot.
Yeah.
Oh, painful. But we will be back in 2 weeks with a new show and a new theme. Our last theme for a while.
Theme for a bit, yeah.
Yeah. So until then, everybody, take care. Sorry about the length. And stay safe. That's what Astro Travel is for, is to see chicks, isn't it?